Blog Talk Radio.
The month of Juneteenth, and this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? And this program deals with the analysis and anatomy of oppression. And we say over and over again that to study and understand oppression, to read your world, as Franz Fanon said, you must. If you're going to take back history, requires an anatomy of colonialism, imperialism, American capitalist system. And with that in mind, all of our guests have a perspective to help you think about developing tools to fight back, to take back your world, to change your world. So tonight, one of the analyses we're going to tackle is the whole concept of reparations. And what we're saying is the foolishness behind the rhetoric of reparations. And that's what we're going to be talking about. However, in addition to that, we have two very special guests. We have an urgent concern for our public access free radio. And we have Sister Serene to help us analyze what's happening there and what to do about it. And we have a special guest, Comrade Don Fitz of the Green Party. He's been a Green Party member since 1990. He's the editor of the Compost Dispatch newsletter, published for the Green Party of St. Louis. He was the 2016 candidate of the Missouri Green Party for governor, and has run as a candidate for state auditor. He has an incredible analysis of what to do about the system and our ecology and saving our world. But before we go to that, we always start off our analysis with Sister Anne. But before we go to that, we always open up the program with Brother Ralph. Ralph Pointer, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. You heard what we're focusing on this evening, the foolishness behind the rhetoric of reparations. Now, what is this program, and what have we oppressed people been about forever? We have been about human rights, to live as beings, of human beings in an inhuman situation. That's the struggle. There was a time when people said, if we have the right to vote, that's going to solve the problem. No, it would be a weapon, maybe, to solve the problem. It's not going to solve the problem because we see with all of the fighting and all of the denial of your human rights, allowing vicious races to beat us, they're taking the voting rights back again. Georgia, and you don't have to stop with Georgia. It goes with long lines and making it impossible for people to vote. We remember Elijah Muhammad, who said, give us 5 states because we can't live with these devils. Well, my thought at the time was that would be the last thing I'd want to do, is to get all people of color in an area in a time period where super bombs could blow us up with one bomb. And it seemed ridiculous to me because we had the most valuable property in this America. That is the inner cities. But we didn't know to fight to control the inner cities. We never had a ghetto. A ghetto is a place where the economy is controlled by the people in the ghetto. We have never been more than an internal colony. And a colony is a place where the outsider comes in and leeches on the colony, takes their people, takes their resources, takes their energy, uses them as an excuse. For example, put them in a death camp and then say you're controlling crime, but in the meantime, you're hiring a lot of white folks who think they have a job. They don't have a job. They're on welfare, but they're allowed to feel proud that they have a job. And speaking of the job, when we talk about our struggle for human rights, we have to say to ourselves, well, maybe if we stop them from taking our human rights. Today and recently, we've been talking about reparations through cannabis. Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is how about freeing all of those victims of this political system that put them in the death camp, and they are now facing death due to COVID, not getting vaccinated. And we don't even talk about that. That was talked about 3 weeks ago, and we as a progressive community only have minds that last a week. Freeing those who are arrested with cannabis, that was 3 weeks ago issue. No, it's the issue today, and it's the issue always, because how can you talk about reparations while they're still stealing from us? One of our focuses on how we're being ripped off is our education system, our miseducation system, the contracts, the money involved. What is the excuse for education budget in New York City? Black and brown students. 65 to 70% of the students are of color. Presently, we had a $20 billion a year budget, which was reduced by Cuomo to $27 billion, and then we get the money for COVID, it takes it to $34 billion, and folks of color get none of that. We do not get an education. We get a miseducation on our way from the projects to the schools to the prisons. Let us start talking about what is real. For us, the reality is those who understood and fought against this inhuman system were put in the death camps. Many have died in the death camps. Many were assassinated on the streets. How can you talk about reparations without talking about these folks? And so we have a situation of death camps, and we're talking about reparations. And we talk about reparations in terms of getting dispensaries while our brothers and sisters have a death penalty over their heads because they were involved in a little bit of weed, plant, cannabis. And we say we want to add that in reparations. That makes us look like idiots. We have this budget, this education budget. They're still stealing it. Imagine this, and I'm going to say it one more time. Imagine if we divided New York City into 31 districts. 75% of them would be, let's just say 60% of them would be black and brown, and we're buying desks and chairs. And we could say to the desk and chair companies, what's your hiring policy? Do you get my drift? Everything that goes into a school building, we could say, what is your hiring policy? That's not reparations. That's stopping them from stealing more from us every day. I could go on and on and on, because what do we have? When I say that we have never been, that this reached the status of ghetto, we're only black communities represented by colonial administrators. Because only a colonial administrator would vote for a drug law that makes it 10 times more punishing for a person of color than a person who is not of color. In your face. We have more black representatives now than ever before, but nothing has changed. What's that mean? They do not serve the community. They serve the political party they are a part of. All but a very few exceptions. We talked about when we use the term reparations, we can't forget Israel. This is a biggie. What about the difference in Israel, people who call themselves Japanese Americans, and the people of color? The difference is there never has been an intent for people of color to live in a human fashion. That is, to have human rights, the most basic human right of all, self-defense. And I would go into my long quote of Lynn Stewart, to live safe, to live in a home, looking at New York City. When I say that, to live in a home, I think of homelessness and the foolishness which we go through year after year after year when, and I hear reparations, I hear, you know, like prison terms, death sentences, and I just ask, how can you talk like this when it is obvious nobody gives a damn about whether we have a home? Nobody gives a damn about whether we're educated. Nobody gives a damn about our health care. And suddenly we're putting people in jail because they care about somebody sticking a needle in their arm. Please. It's a game. It's a war on us. What points it up more than the opioid problem in the white community? And yet, in the face of all of this reality, we say, we want you to repair us, to help us go forward. Never mind the fact that you're stealing from us every day. Every community in America depends on fines and the application of law that opposes justice for people of color. Open up a restaurant and you better have everything in order or you will get tickets. You will get fined. You'll be run out of business. This is the old way that it has always been done. And I could go into what happened with the governor of Louisiana, I believe it said, after the Civil War. He said, we wanted to keep slavery, but the codes that you have written, this government has written, does the job. We still got slavery, and that is the death camp, and that's Angola, and in the death camps in Georgia, and on and on and on. And so what I'd like people to begin to do, think of the struggle, because I try to wrap my mind around why reparations is a gift from government. Social change is a struggle, a constant struggle. And that's what we're facing, my dear friends. Where do we begin this constant struggle? I would hope this evening you will hear voices to talk about where they are struggling and where we must support the struggle. And I must confess that our dear Professor Louis is not with us this evening, and due to our technical difficulties, we will not have him. And so, Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. We cannot respond enough to what we are seeing on the screens of our studio tonight. It is off the chart. We're starting off, as always, to honor our political prisoners before we go to the issue, the seriousness of our free public access radio. Sister Ann, we're opening up your mic. We see Brother Kazi. We're opening his mic, and we have a special guest. I don't know if we are to introduce him. I will leave that up to Brother Kazi, who can advise us. But your mics are open.
Oh, okay. I'll let Ann go first.
Okay,
mics are open.
He said he'd let me go first. I haven't done my little COVID update on the prisons last week, I realized, and I said, oh, shit, have to do that. People, get prepared to hear these startling statistics. There have been at least 398,319 cases of COVID-19 among incarcerated people since we started keeping track, this is the Marshall Project, more than a year ago. Of those, at least 2,697 people have died, death by incarceration, death by COVID. So that is just a horrible, horrible statistic. We do have some very interesting upcoming events. I could do that later if you want.
Yes.
There's a Freedom Ride going on. I could
do that later. And come back with the announcement. Brother Kazi, Comrade Kazi, your mic is open. And if you want to introduce your special guest, you can. If not, the guests can just listen. Go ahead, Brother Kazi.
Sure. That's Sister Betty. Thank you. Yes, I'll do announcements later. But, yeah, I wanted to introduce my comrade in arms who has been down for 37 years and just rose back up out here from the Ohio 7 United Freedom Front, Jan Lama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll let him tell you the rest.
Before he gets on, those of you who were at Sister Lynn's memorial, you remember the moving speech he made in sympathy to the family. And, of course, you know, they put him in the hole that is in solitary confinement and added on to his time for expressing a human emotion of regret and remorse.
Brother Yard, your mic is open.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure and honor to be on here tonight with all of you. Brother Ralph, just going back all these years to Lynn and the struggle from decades ago right up until this very day. First of all, it's just amazing to be out here after decades, 37 years, decades and decades of captivity. Like so many, many of those years were spent in isolation, segregation, and control units, and they got names for everything, but it's all about just trying to not only lock you up, but the whole idea of incarcerating or, you know, putting people, political activists and revolutionaries into captivity, the whole idea is to disappear you. Like literally, if they don't, you know, take you out and kill you on the spot, the idea is to disappear you, like both to stop you from doing whatever work it is that you were doing or that you could do and would do, will do from behind the wall, but also to intimidate people on the streets and saying, well, if you stand up too hard or if you fight too long or too seriously, you know, we're going to disappear you also. So, of course, you know, for those of us that do find ourselves behind the walls, the whole point is, the key is to keep on struggling, which we would do whether we're inside or outside, and, you know, as much as possible try to, you know, crack those bars at least enough to get the voice out and get the information out. And let me just say a quick thing here in relationship to the COVID. I was in a U.S. penitentiary in Kentucky, McCreary. That's where I left from last month. But while we were there, what they did is they just locked everybody down. But they didn't give us tests. They didn't do anything. They just locked everyone down, canceled all visits, made phone calls very difficult. And on Christmas Eve, a Native brother, John Buffalo, he died. They left him in his cell for hours before they even took him out. And then sadly, on Martin Luther King Day, a brother from Washington, D.C. died, and with him, they left him laying in the cell dead even longer. And that's just like two men that died in one cell block of about 100 people. And that's just like a tiny sample of the numbers that, you know, Ann was, or somebody just before spoke about. But that's the kind of ugly reality that really it was existing and continues to exist. Now, they have been vaccinating people to some extent, so hopefully at least the body count won't go up too much further. But I just, you know, wanted to give people a little idea of, you know, what that looks like beyond the numbers. But anyway, certainly I'm just, of course, pleased and very glad to be out here and being able to say words to listeners and to fellow activists and revolutionaries. I mean, there's so much work to be done, and you know, it's the same work. Like when Kazi and I, you know, were first captured back in the 80s, you know, we were especially fighting against apartheid, trying to get Nelson Mandela out of prison and trying to get apartheid out of South Africa. But at the same very time, you know, cops were murdering people here in the United States, killing black people left and right, the name I kind of remember from those days is when they killed the old sister Eleanor Bumpers, killed her right there in front of an apartment door. I mean, it's the same thing that's still going on today. So the need for and the importance of the struggle that people are taking up and advancing today, whether it's George Floyd or Breonna Taylor and so many of these other names, I mean, the names that just get piled up on top of each other, but each of these are people with families and children, you know, and it just goes on and on. So our need for and what's so encouraging today is that more and more people are stepping forward and taking up the absolutely necessary struggle, not only against, you know, murdering cops, but, you know, the larger system that those cops are all about defending. I mean, that's the real purpose of a police force all across, and we know the history of it, but the purpose of them today is to protect this system as it exists. So when we challenge them and criticize them, you know, we do understand that, I'm sure, that we're looking at the larger system that employs them and uses them against the public, against the people, and, of course, most of all, against people of color. So it is encouraging to see, you know, more and more people stepping forward today. And you know, that's, I certainly encourage that and salute everyone that's doing that.
Well, we are certainly honored and feel great joy of your presence on this side of the wall. And as I said before, I'm looking so forward to see you in person, embrace you, and discuss the issues that need discussing. Thanks, Brother Jan Lahman, Ohio 7.
All right, for those of you who don't know, Brother Kazi is, Kazi Kore, a former political prisoner, and those of you who don't know who Sister Ann Lam is, I'm just going to say one word, Jericho. Get on the website and make a donation. I don't care how small it is. When these warriors come home, we have to protect them. We have to defend them. We have to provide a life for them out here. So get on the Jericho website and please make a donation now. Brother Kazi, did you want to add to that?
Yeah.
And then, Anne, you can also add to that. Brother Kazi, what website did they donate for Jan Lahman?
Oh, Jericho is fine, Betty. I was just saying, you know, the struggle, you know, of the prisoners coming out, you know, like Jaleel and Jan and Herman, the conditions, they don't let up. You know what I mean? Like, they still had Jaleel on ankle bracelet curfew for 6 months after he got out. They still got an ankle bracelet on Debbie Africa when she got out.
Yeah.
They got an ankle bracelet on Jan when he comes out. Curfew, you know, the repression continues, you know. It's not like, I mean, people should recognize that we are all in minimum security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like
right
Malcolm
on.
Said. And some of us, you know, are on death row in minimum security.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, whatever people can do, we're on the grind, you know, building for the Spirit of Mandela. And they can go to that website and we're linking the struggles and the issues with, you know, with Palestine and what's going on there, over there and their political prisoners. And we have the 73rd anniversary of the Al-Nakba coming up on June 12th.
Mm.
And hopefully, you know, I'll send you the flyers about it. But all this work is continued to break down U.S. capitalism and imperialism and align ourselves with a people's struggle to work internationally. Same oppressors.
But, Brother Kazi, and this is what we do. Learn, and as Lynn Stewart said, join. As soon as you learn, join before you learn, because when you join, it will improve your learning. And when you're active, it's learning. And so thanks again for these wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people who take a moment out to encourage us to be like them. Thanks again, Sister Betty.
I want to remind you also that Brother Kazi is with Boston Jericho, and mm-hmm. Sister Ann is with New York City Jericho. So even if you can't get on the Zooms and help us organize in our individual boroughs, you can go to their websites and make a donation. Also, I do believe New York City Jericho has an up-and-coming event. Sister Ann?
Oh, yes, there's several up-and-coming events. This is not ours, but it's happening on Thursday, June 10th at the People's Forum. There's a reception for the father and brother of international political prisoner Julian Assange, right? So,
right on.
As people may or may not know, the Biden administration is continuing the same attempts to extradite him here to the United States, where he would have a possibly 175-year prison term for being a journalist and exposing war crimes. So they're on a national tour, but they'll be here in New York City just for one day, June 10th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the People's Forum. I went and clicked on the links. The in-person event is sold out. They doubled the capacity, and it's still sold out, which is great news to hear. But it will be live streamed. So if you go to jerichony.org and go down the left-hand side, look for that event, click on the link, you will have the information. You'll have more place to get more information about Julian Assange if you don't know about him already. And you will have the link to the live stream, which will be on YouTube. So I'm glad to hear that it's actually sold out. But that's a very important event. You know, he's a journalist. He's the founder of WikiLeaks. And, you know, he's not in good shape physically, as many prisoners are not. And he would probably die if he came here and was sent to prison for 145 years. And then,
well, thank you for that, Anne.
Yes, simultaneously, there is a freedom ride going on for our dear beloved brother, Leonard Peltier. And this is being organized by, among other people, David Hill. People may know David. He's been running Spend for years. So they have started the ride. They started on June 7th in South Dakota. They will be arriving in D.C. on June 21st, and they'll be staying there and doing a vigil until June 26th. And if people don't know, June 26th is the anniversary of the shootout at Oglala. And that is the incident that led to Leonard's eventual capture and continued imprisonment. And as the whole world knows, he did not commit this crime. He is innocent. And I just wanted to read this very short statement from David. And you can go to their website. They have one, freedomride2021.com. And you can be following where they're going. I know they're going to be in Richmond, Virginia, because Jihad is arranging to do an event with them when they arrive there. Anyway, David Hill says, greetings to you all. My name is David Hill. I'm of the Choctaw Nation and an organizer with the American Indian Movement since 1972. My reason for this letter is to bring attention to the illegal, unjust incarceration of my fellow Sundancer, Leonard Peltier. Leonard Peltier and others were illegally and unjustifiably attacked on June 26, 1975. In the act of defending themselves, one Native American and two FBI agents were killed. The Native people were on their own land and not seeking confrontation. Our people did not provoke this attack, and historically it is consistent with this government's policies that has at times driven indigenous groups to the point of extinction. It is our understanding that you, the receivers of this letter, might have some power of intervention or promote some form of judicial change in the case of Leonard Peltier and other political prisoners who have suffered the same fate. David Hill. So I just wanted people to pay attention to that. It's very important. And still trying to get this innocent brother home after all these years. So
well,
that's
thank
all
you.
I have to say for now. And it was great to hear you
thank
on.
For that, Anne. And along these same lines of information, we have a very important guest to talk about why we do not get this information and how we can improve it by supporting a community radio station supported by the people.
Before that wonderful speaker gets on, I know you know for decades, Brother Mamiya had a voice. He had an outlet. I know you know that for decades, there were petitions and motions made via BAI. As recently as just last month, there was a support resolution passed by Pacifica supporting Mamiya. And we all know when our lawyers, I believe it was Michael Warren, was attacked, we used BAI to organize an instant support and surround the police station in Brooklyn where they took him. So this is our job, to support those who support us in our hour of need. So without further ado, Sister Serene Roberts, your mic is open.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and good night. I wanted to just jump on what Sister Anne was talking about with regard to the Assange, Julian's father and brother being in New York on Thursday, and that event being sold out. It will be streamed, but it will also be carried live on WBAI. So that's 99.5 FM if you're in the area, or WBAI.org if you're elsewhere. So that's another mechanism you can use to stay on top of this. I mean, it's more than a story, right? It's our life. It's about people who do whatever is needed to get the information out, because without accurate information about what's happening, we cannot make progress. We do not know from whence the attack is coming. We need the specifics of who is doing what and in whose name. So, yeah, this is about WBAI in the New York area, but it's really about Pacifica as a national network, the oldest listener-supported network, the oldest non-commercial network. So NPR is busy celebrating its 50 years. You know, Pacifica started in 1949, I think, our first broadcast. Pacifica itself was organized by people who were pacifists. They were opposed to World War II. And Pacifica remains, for the most part, we do have some people, but for the most part, it remains a place where war is opposed, where self-determination for the people of the nations of the world is advocated for. And I want to talk to you about what's happening within Pacifica and what we need to make sure doesn't happen to Pacifica. So whether you're in the New York Tri-State area and it's WBAI, or you're in Washington, D.C., and, you know, Maryland, Virginia, and it's WPFW for you, or it's KPFT in Houston, or KPFA in Berkeley, Oakland, or KPFK in L.A., this is a time to really step up and make sure that you protect this means of communication, because it cannot be replaced. We cannot build another one. And terrestrial radio signals, and we have some pretty powerful signals, are limited in number. So there's no way that we're going to get back anything close to what we have if we allow the people who tell us that they're here to save us, if we allow them to steal it away from us. So there are two important processes happening right now. I'm going to begin with what And Ralph is a member of the WBAI local station board, and Sister Betty, I hope, will become a member of the local station board. But here's the process. We have elected local station boards comprised of listeners and staff people, and those boards provide local oversight. So they evaluate the manager, they recommend, and they pick the candidate pool if that slot is open. Same for the program director, because really a program director is a very important position. You need someone who will facilitate community access and support producers in getting the word out and support getting the youth properly, you know, trained and fully engaged in becoming the next generation of Pacificans. Because It's not about how long individual A has had their show. It's about what entree individual A has provided for the next generation. Okay. So the local station board provides local oversight, is supposed to approve the budget, make sure the spending stays on track, make sure the mission stays on track. And the mission is to provide unique access, unique combinations of news not normally found, work towards the things that, to alleviating the stresses and the differences and the hostility that form between groups and nations, creeds, races. You know, there's stuff to do, and discussions have to be had, because picking up a gun is not always the solution, although I know for sure that in some situations that may be the best short-term resolution. But
thank you for that.
Talking here. Yeah, I'm talking here about revolution, not your neighbor, literally, you know. But, yeah, it's about getting people access to the air so we can communicate with each other about what's important. So with regard to the local station boards, you can run for a local station board seat, or you can make sure that you're in a position to vote for the local station board later this summer. It means that you have to have contributed $25 anytime between July 1st of last year, 2020, or up until the end of this month, June 30th, 21. And you can go to WBAI.org, which is our general website, and you'll see the donate button. And that'll take you to the website where you can make your donation, $25 in order to be able to vote or run. The deadline, again, and it's important, is the end of June. Now, the only thing that can thwart us in getting a really progressive board, and we do need, I would say, a more progressive board than we have, and progressive is probably not strong enough a word to describe the kinds of people we need in there to defend this station and this network. But the only thing that can stop us from moving forward is if folks who have been listening for years but are busy, and sometimes cash is tight. But, you know, today is only the 8th? So you've got 3 weeks to find that $25 if you've not made a contribution since last July so that you are qualified to vote. And then pay very close attention, to quote Bernard White, you know, pay close attention to what people are talking, what people are doing. And, you know, we have time to come back to that. The most pressing thing right now within Pacifica is this bylaws referendum that's happening, where there are a group of people, and some of you will remember them because they have come at us before. It began, you'll remember, October 2019. Folks are doing their work. And suddenly, this interim executive director, two folks out of Houston, and we're going to get back to Houston because Houston, we do have a problem, you know, and security guards that they hired from Patrick Brosnan's law firm. Now, you'll remember Patrick Brosnan is one of the cops involved in the execution of two young Latinx men in the Bronx. So that's the security firm, armed guards, that those folks walk up in WBAI, change the locks, tell the staff to leave, that they will no longer be employed, told the landlord to find herself another tenant. And we had to go to court with them. We had to battle them. Tens of thousands of dollars. It took us a month to get the judge to rule that, hell no, go back where you came from, hands off WBAI. Those same folks, they're back. October 2019, it was the lockout, or the break-in, as I call it. It was a break-in and a lockout. Then they came with one set of bylaw proposals. We beat them back 2-1. They are back again. They've given themselves a new name. They've changed some of the faces on the front of the billing, you know, and they're after us again. I know there's a lot to cover tonight. I know there are other guests, so I'm going to try to wrap this up. But if you contributed to Pacifica, any of the five stations, between April 8th of 2020 and by April 7th of this year, you should have gotten a ballot in your email. If you have not, and I'll repeat the website again, it's elections.pacifica.org, elections.pacifica.org. Please get that ballot, and please vote no. We don't think that everything is perfect, but we know damn well that people who are telling us, we are here to save you, we don't have a plan, but as soon as we get in, we're going to find some money to take care of all the problems, that they're not to be trusted. These are the same folks who broke down the door, although they are claiming, well, things are different now, and it's a different group of people. Well, you know something? The guy who came out of Houston to break down the door is the guy who came with the last set of bylaws that we rejected. And you know what he said? He said, these people are my friends. I trust them, and I hope you will too. Well, if you needed any more than that as a signal that was not the way to go, there it is. He is recommending that you support people who would, one, take away standard transferable voting, right? That's ranked choice. That means you can actually vote for more. You can spread your vote. You as a voter have a better range of choices, and it provides a way for minorities on the board to actually have a say instead of the winner take all. So they want to get rid of that. Then they said, oh, we have your four officers for your national board. They're going to be in place for 3 years. Some of these are people who've been around long enough and have never contributed any of the ideas that they're now saying will save the world. And some of them we don't know from Adam. Okay? But they come in without an election. They just show up and they are in charge of everything for 3 years. These are folks who've been backed in some cases by the Democratic Party, you know. And I want to say that, you know, there are political groups, and we understand the man who left the White House in January, you know, has his thing, and almost anything would be better, perhaps, than that thing. But Pacifica doesn't belong to the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has some accounting and explaining to do. And we're not turning Pacifica into a tool of the Democratic Party. Okay? So there are a number of things that they are pushing that are objectionable. I want to urge you also to go to a website called pacificafightback.org. PacificaFightBack.org to get some of the specifics that are problematic, because there are many. Right now we have in Houston, that's KPFT. Now, Texas is a big state, and there's some nice people in Texas, but Texas has been a very backward state. We have a station that's about 40 years old, and in fact, it was bombed off of the air a couple of times when it first started by the KKK, okay? So we know that not everybody in Houston appreciates the message, but we know that some program changes that have been shoved through, and some of them are on hold after protest, but some program changes were just made in Houston that took off apparently 23 programs by the Black community, the Latinx community, by radical thinkers, and they've put them on to an HD drive, which requires a specialty radio, which a lot of people don't have. The programming there is not very well listened to, and they've actually removed some of them entirely from the station without a process, without a discussion with the programmers who are affected, without discussion with the local station board that has a mandate of making sure that program changes happen in a way that is respectful, transparent, and collaborative, right? Houston is where that guy came from. And although he's no longer bearing the same title he had in 2019 when he came to bust down our doors, the thinking hasn't changed and his role hasn't changed. So again, if you're a member of any of the five Pacifica stations, we need you to vote in this bylaw referendum. Bylaws went out on Sunday. On Monday, very early Monday morning. If you're on one of the East Coast stations, it's Monday morning. Otherwise, look, if you're from one of the California or the Houston stations, then it came to you Sunday night because of the time differential. It went out like just after midnight, Sunday into Monday. Please look for your ballot and please vote and vote no and tell your friends to vote no. If anybody has ever mentioned a Pacifica station to you, tell them we need them now. Okay, so those websites again, elections.pacifica.org for the official information and to understand why we are fighting, go to pacificafightback.org.
Thank you so much for that, Serena, and I hope everybody sees how it's all connected. I'm going to cut to the chase. Let us make ourselves more relevant in the information scene. Join Pacifica and vote no. This is Ralph telling you what's going to make it better for us. Join Pacifica and vote no. Thank you so much for that, Serene. And we have to get our message out to the people before we can talk about changing anything. Sister Betty.
All right. I cannot thank you enough, Sister Serene. And again, I'm so grateful for Kazi facilitating our warrior comrade to visit us. We want to go on, and we want to let you know we've extended the program. We did not anticipate so many guests. But our mission is to free our political prisoners, and Pacifica has played a large role in that. Prison Radio in California, they have been awesome. I'll never forget how many times the Pacifica stations had Sister Lynn on, and Sister Lynn didn't just talk about herself. She wanted them to free them all.
And no one can forget Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen and Like It Is. And I was on every week talking about taking aim, talking about bringing our dear Sister Lynn home. These are wonderful people. We must support their memory, if nothing else. Sister Betty.
All right. Thank you. And without further ado, we recognize that we've got Henry, Tom, Gwen, and Brother Dennis, as well as Joel. Please don't leave. Gil is getting anxious also, but we need to have reports from all of you. Again, I want to announce that we will be taking our sabbatical for the month of July and August, but for the month of June, we will be here till the end of June, and then July and August, we will be taking our hiatus and recharging our batteries. Without further ado, I want to introduce you to a gentleman who has taken on the charge of saving our climate, saving our planet, but not only that, of holding the Democrats and the Republicans accountable. As I said before, he is a Green Party member since 1990. He's the editor of Compost Dispatch newsletter published for the Green Party of St. Louis. He was the 2016 candidate of the Missouri Green Party for governor and the candidate for state auditor in 2018. Don Fitz, your mic is open. And welcome.
Betty, thank you so much. I feel really honored to be part of this program tonight. I deeply appreciate the people who have spoken before, especially about the prison conditions inside the United States, about South African apartheid, about the need to go international with the whole discussion of reparations, and especially the person who talked about Leonard Peltier. which is an example not just of Native people in the United States, but all throughout this hemisphere. What I want to speak about is the false promise of alternative energy and how it is part of the overall capitalist oppressive system. We hear a lot about electric vehicles, about solar power, about wind power, and how these are part of Joe Biden's plans to go forward. But what we don't hear is how the negative aspects of those and the oppressive aspects of them. Keep in mind that these sources of alternative energy, they're not just simple windmills. They're not just simple solar panels. They're very complex pieces of machinery that require minerals from all over the world. And what happens is that capitalists go into countries, they destroy indigenous cultures. A lot of people are, and this is to get the minerals. It's also to get dams built to extract energy. A lot of native cultures all over the world are built on ties to the rivers, ties to the ocean, ties to the land, the places where they live. And when the companies do this, they destroy the indigenous cultures. They starve out the people and force them to work for a mere pittance. They get a tiny amount of the wealth that they actually deserve. The corporations and the governments jail and kill people who resist this. This is especially true. Just a few months ago was the fifth anniversary of the murder of Bertha Cáceres, who was an activist, a land and river activist in Honduras and known all over the world for her work, and she was murdered 5 years ago. When the companies do this and they have these mines, they destroy the farmland so that the cultures who have depended on growing food to support themselves and to trade, they can no longer farm, or the land is so poisoned that basically the land is left as a toxic wasteland, and people cannot grow anything like what they did before, or a lot of times they can grow absolutely nothing. This occurs in the relationships between the rich countries and the poor countries. The rich countries are generally those in Western Europe, North America, the United States, and Canada, along with Japan and Australia. And the poor countries, of course, are the overwhelming majority of countries in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. And I just want to mention some of the things that happen in Africa. These are just a few of the things that happen. One of the components for electric vehicles, which is very rarely talked about, is cobalt. Two-thirds of the cobalt in the world comes from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which uses child labor to exploit in order to create the mines that tear apart the land. They're open pit mines. You dig this enormous pit, and then many of the laborers who go into there that are children, some as young as 4 years old. If you have a computer or if you can access Google on your phone, what I would urge you to do later on is to Google a simple phrase, child labor in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or even better, Google images, photos of child labor in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. What you will see is many, many photos coming up of children of all ages working in the Congo to extract cobalt to get money, to get a mere pittance of what they would be deserving. And the labor conditions are absolutely awful. These children are deprived of education. It's estimated that 30% of the children of the Democratic Republic of the Congo work in some sort of mine, if not for cobalt, if for something else. Another example from Africa is uranium. France relies almost exclusively on nuclear power, but France does not have any uranium for the nuclear power. So they take virtually all of it from the African country of Mali. That's about where 75% of the uranium for France goes. And, of course, Mali is not exactly getting rich off of this. Another country is Zambia, which has enormous copper mines. And, again, and copper is used for solar power. It's used for wind power. It's used in electric vehicles. It's used through all sorts of electrical appliances, and Zambia is being bled for its copper. These are just three examples. If you got all of them, we would take hours and hours to go over them, because Africa has hundreds and hundreds of minerals from dozens of countries that are exploited right now. And it's very odd when they talk about alternative energy, they talk about the price of solar power is cheap, the price of wind power is cheap. It's cheap precisely because of the exploitative relationships between the rich countries and the poor countries. If people in poor countries were paid $15 an hour or $20 an hour for the labor that they do to extract these minerals, the alternative energy would not be cheap at all. Exploitation is the factor which makes it cheap. You got to say, well, some of these minerals are available in different places. Where do the corporations go to look for them? Well, what they look for is the area of, they say, least resistance. And what least resistance, if they're looking for minerals in the United States, they would look for an area which is poor, which is non-union, which is predominantly people of color. If they're going to areas outside of the United States, they would look for areas with military dictators. This is what they mean by the least resistant. It's the most profitable for the countries to go into these areas. We've entered a period of what I call hyper-extraction. And what that means is the corporations are extracting minerals at a much higher rate than any sort of reparations can make good. The companies that these minerals are extracted from really need to receive reparations. But even if they receive financial compensation, that can't possibly compensate for land which you can never farm on again or not farm on for hundreds or thousands of years because it's so contaminated. If you destroy the fishing in a river or a stream, money cannot compensate for the fact that they have destroyed people's culture. An example of how extreme hyper-extractivism is electric vehicles. You cannot have an electric vehicle without lithium. And lithium only is found in a few places in the world. One of those places is the triangle, which includes Chile, Argentina, and Bolivia, and especially Bolivia. But if you mined all of the lithium and wanted to give everybody, wanted to make sure that everybody in the world could have an electric vehicle by the year 2050, you would have to mine three times as much lithium as there is reserves. So the idea that we're going to solve problems by going to alternative energy is totally wrong. It's not possible. There's not enough minerals in the ground to do that. The companies are doing this for their profit, not because they want to solve the fossil fuel crisis. The fossil fuel crisis is a very real problem. But the only solution which a lot of environmentalists see is a reduction in the overall use of energy. And by reducing the use of energy, by reducing production, we don't mean having an austere lifestyle. We don't mean having people living without anything. We mean living without a war economy. Well, because that's where a huge amount of the wealth goes today, and producing machines to build up the American military all over the world to extract these minerals. It goes to police. I mean, in St. Louis, when I went to the Michael Brown demonstrations demonstrations after the murder of Michael Brown in 2015, we saw tanks going up and down the streets in Ferguson, Missouri. Why in the world do you need a tank for people who are marching down the street asking for justice? This is incredible. What the capitalist system does is to intentionally produce things to fall apart. I can remember years and years ago, I had a phone that I kept for 30 years. Who now has a phone that they can use for more than 2 years? Sometimes they go out of style or break apart at 6 months. What capitalism is doing is producing more and more things that fall apart quicker and quicker. And so as a result of this economy of constant turnover, of constant things constantly breaking, they have to exploit resources more and more. So what capitalism is doing is making the earth, first of all, uninhabitable for the poor countries, for the people who live there, giving them absolutely miserable working conditions, not having the ability to continue to farm. And what they are doing is basically setting the stage for the extinction of millions and millions of species and which will ultimately mean the termination of life of human beings. It really is a choice not between capitalism and barbarism. It's a choice between capitalism and the continuation of the human species. So I hope that people are aware that when you hear about the various forms of alternative energy, you realize that that this is built upon extreme forms of exploitation.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I say to all of our people out there in radio land, where are you going to get this information? We must protect the information. We must protect the program. We must protect each other. Sister Betty.
I want to remind you that the warrior who's on tonight, John Lumman, fought to make sure the children in South Africa didn't have to keep going into the diamond mines. That was one of the things they were organizing and fighting for, was the freedom of South Africa and its people. I just want to remind you of what a political prisoner does. He's not from South Africa. He's not from that part of the world. But he did 37 years to guarantee that some child in South Africa did not have to go into a diamond mine or any other mineral mine that the Europeans are exploiting. Unfortunately, you got a black misleadership class now in South Africa. It's sometimes when you win, you don't really win. But then you do what you got to do. You keep right on fighting. And so that is why this program is about political prisoners. And that is why we salute people like Brother Kazi and Brother Jan and Sister Ann, who keeps the struggle going to free some more of them. I'm going to open their mics out if any of you wanted to respond to what Comrade Don has said. And I want to say to Don, you are welcome to join the usual suspects, Tom and Joel and Gwen and Gil and Dolores and Henry. Our usual suspects have been fighting this fight on this program for quite a few years, and we would be happy if you would join the usual suspects anytime you feel like you want to get a message across. Jan, Kazi, and your mic is open if you want to respond.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'll say this, Betty. You know, like when we were struggling against all those repressive forces in South Africa, you know, in Namibia, in Swapo, Angola, and then Zimbabwe. I mean, you know, what Mugabe did, what a lot of those leaders did, you know, were under a lot of different kinds of pressure, and they made mistakes, you know, and some of them weren't really true revolutionaries either.
Yeah.
Some of them just got into power and, you know, flipped. I mean, how can you, when you fight for 30 or 40 years, you know, I always feel like, you know, time for the negotiation is now. And we're trying to negotiate with people now to have a better life. But if it goes to the point where we have to pick up arms to fight, then but at that point, we just fight until it's over with.
Right on. Right on.
You know, let's negotiate. Let's deal with each other as human beings before we start fighting and have to pick up guns. But once we do, I mean, for self-defense, because that's what it's about, they're trying to kill us. We're at war. This is a war. Right?
That can't be made any clearer than that.
And I just want to say thank you, Ken. To the political prisoners. Anybody else want to speak before we move on?
Well, I agree with what Kazi just said. You know, if you're going to exhaust all peaceful means of negotiation and, you know, treating people like human beings, you know, once we start fighting, it ain't over till it's over.
Right on. These are the people we are supporting here on this program. thank you so much for contributing. And Sister Betty.
Brother Don, Comrade Don, again, you are, you're in the fellowship of the ring, if we can use the things. You've joined the fellowship of the ring. And you come and talk about what capitalism is anytime. Anybody who's got that kind of analysis is welcome here. We want to go on to Brother Joel. We want to remind you that we've extended the program, but try and keep it tight because we want to get everybody in. Brother Joel, your mic is open. Brother Tom and Brother Henry and Sister Gwen, please don't hang up on us. Go ahead, Brother Joel. And I see Brother Dennis, too.
Joel, your mic is open. Hello?
Hello, Joel.
Yes, hello. Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
We
now?
Hear you.
Okay, I want to start out by thanking the program for the honor of participating in this discussion. And I want to thank all those who have spoken earlier about raising such central points to the survival of the entire human race that capitalism is confronting us with now. And nowhere else, you know, when you read the regular media, you don't hear about the desperate situation that we're in and the need to transform so many things in order to continue surviving, not only the human race, but maybe even the bulk of all the species on Earth. It can become a dead planet pretty soon. And it shows the urgency of the issue, and yet this hardly ever appears in the media at all. And if it does, it's usually repeated as a criticism of somebody trying to point it out and a denial that that's where the capitalist system is taking us, and where the necessity for solidarity around the world with those who are fighting back, with those who are waging revolutionary warfare, and those who are engaged in attempting to reverse the course through revolutionary change. Because as long as the same people molded by the same system are in charge of all the world's finance, meaning the ownership of the mines and the mills, the farms, the land, everything, our lives, and even our minds, when we consider the impact of the media, we need this solidarity as the remedy for all the ways in which this tiny minority of super rich that run the world can rule over billions and billions of people through the main strategy of divide and conquer. And what we need is unity and solidarity from a revolutionary perspective. And I don't want people to confuse this with feeling take the least common denominator, because arriving at that unity and solidarity means comradely debate about various strategies to bring about that solidarity as a material fact, as we continue to do our best to organize our communities and give people the knowledge that they need to organize around and to maintain the struggle. And I want to say also, in response to the idea of negotiating versus revolutionary armed struggle in general, I remember during the Vietnam anti-war movement, there was a moderate wing whose slogan was "Negotiate Now," and a lot of that was used to criticize in a way the Vietnamese, because they were supposedly, the main thrust was aimed that the U.S. should negotiate, but it was a slogan as opposed to bring the troops home now or bring the war home now. Because as long as we limit ourselves to limit ourselves to a strategy of negotiations, well, it doesn't really touch who we're negotiating with and the power that they have. Unless there's a revolution, the power that they have, which is not only not dismantled, but continues to function inevitably in a way to rob and rape and murder and commit genocide around the world. And the negotiating can't end that. The negotiations themselves can only be a part of ending that if they grow out of the amount of force necessary to bring about a capitulation of the ruling class to the governance of working and oppressed people around the world, again, in the spirit of human solidarity and under the pressure of the needs of human survival. I just want to say one other thing right now about seems to change the subject slightly, but again, for those who want to think that the Biden administration is such an improvement over Trump, a little noted case now is taking place in which a woman credibly accuses Trump of having raped her. Trump counterattacked with a lawsuit against this woman. And this lawsuit was then supported by the United States Department of Justice suing a woman for defamation for credibly accusing Trump of having raped her. Now, the Biden administration during the election had said that that was a disgraceful privatization of the Department of Justice into a private law firm to defend Trump in a horrific crime, that one of the small ones that he had engaged in. But now the Biden Justice Department has swung over to support Trump in that lawsuit, claiming that the woman is suing Trump for defamation because he called her a liar about being so. Now the Biden administration has jumped in and is supporting Trump in that lawsuit under the absolutely absurd claim that the defense of that lawsuit was an official act of the president's office in the United States, and therefore he is immune. Whereas it's so obviously and like I say, the Biden administration, you can't figure out what their motive is, except the example in a negative way that we can learn from, that the ruling class stands in solidarity with all of the people who are oppressed, and even oppressed in a special criminal incident where they feel that they have to swing into actual solidarity. I hate to apply that word to it, but in terms of defending Trump, you can't think of any other motive except ruling class solidarity against all the oppressed classes and individuals in the world.
Thank you so much, Joe. Now, you're not going to hear that in the regular media. So we must support our own media, and we must listen to these voices and learn. Sister Betty.
We have another member of the usual suspects,
But we also have another Pacifica BAI supporter. So we're going to go to Tom, but we're asking that the BAI person please hang in there. Brother Tom, your mic is open.
Greetings to all my comrades on this block. What everyone in this country should have is full health care coverage through a nationalized health care system in which individuals do not pay any out-of-pocket costs.
Yes.
This is opposed by corrupt union leaders who would have fewer excuses to negotiate higher wages, pensions, and working conditions for all their members. This, of course, is also opposed by the insurance companies and the medical establishment that fund the two major political parties. So why do many of us still vote for these lackey politicians, both Democrat and Republican? Why do other countries have full coverage, socialized health care, especially in Europe? After World War II, the economies of Europe were so devastated that there was a dire need for socialized health care. To avoid a revolutionary situation led by unions controlled by leftists and socialists, governments instituted an extensive social safety net, which included nationalized health care. The U.S., on the other hand, emerged with its infrastructure and economy intact and a powerful private insurance sector. During the preceding depression of the 1930s, unions were militant and controlled by communists and socialists. Right after the war, the unions were still strong, and there was a shortage of labor as the United States supplied its products to Europe and Japan. But capitalism cannot increase its profits with strong independent unions and full employment. The ruling capitalist class had to purge the union leaders and install sellout union leaders, accomplished by starting a Cold War in the 1950s with the Soviet Union, together with McCarthy witch hunts that resulted in leftist parties becoming totally marginalized. Another worldwide war between the United States and the USSR was out of the question, as both possessed nuclear weapons that would obliterate civilization. Capitalism needs some form of imperialism. Limited, quote, police actions are on the agenda. The bloody Korean War ended in a stalemate, and the imposition of the draft during the Vietnam War caused widespread rebellion among college youth who were eligible for the draft once they graduated from college. The Vietnam War ended in a complete defeat. By the 1970s, capitalists entered into a stage that has reached a serious crisis. Sellout union leaders are losing their control as wages stagnate and production and jobs are outsourced to cheaper labor markets. The U.S. faces stiff competition from other capitalist countries, and companies try to keep wages competitive with low-wage countries. The COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated the whole economic debacle. International capitalism is showing its inevitable contradictions of overproduction and shrinking consumption.
I don't know if I'm totally...
U.S. unemployment and home foreclosures have reached the levels of the Depression of the 1930s. This especially affects communities of color. The ruling class is using the COVID-19 pandemic as a distraction. It is also using the old tactic of pitting one group against another. But none of this will prevent the collapse of capitalism. So, what's next? Socialism or fascism? Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. because, as I said before, you're not going to hear this other places. Sister Betty.
All right, Brother William, your mic is open. We're going to ask the people who come on to speak briefly because we've got a couple of more speakers. Go ahead, Brother William, and thank you for getting on. We've got another champion for Pacifica and BAI. Brother William.
William Hairwagon.
Okay, thank you. And thank you both for doing this show continuously. I think Serene spoke. I think she was going to speak about Pacifica and BAI. And
she did.
Ralph,
she did.
Okay. So I won't say much. She probably covered it all. But Ralph and I are both on the BAI local station board, and there are people that are trying to undo what Pacifica's tried to be for these many decades. If you get your some kind of voting information, a ballot should come in an email, or perhaps you'll even get something in the actual postal mail. But if you get it, and if you've contributed, or if you get it, it means you have contributed, then you have to vote no on this proposal to replace the bylaws with new ridiculous stuff that's going to take away most, if not all, local powers. Thanks very much.
It can't be said clearer than that. Join and vote no. Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother William, and please come back again. Don't be a stranger. Talk more about the programs on BAI. Boost the station. Without further ado, Sister Gwen.
Hi. It's such a brief time to share that I wanted to just bring up a point that I spoke to Ralph about last week's conversation about Black Wall Street. It occurred to me when I was listening to the show that we were paying homage to this town, not just because it was a black town that was bombed by other Americans, by white Americans, but because of the wealth that was created by this town. So as I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, right, they have a lot of wealth, and this story, although hidden in many for a long time, it was also aired for a long time, too. It was often aired on BAI. I knew about it because of the coverage that BAI gave it to it. So they kept it alive until finally it got to the place where we recognized it, apologized for it, and, you know, all of that is a good thing. But while I was listening to it, I was also listening to the people speaking on this program. And a lot of times we hear about the evils of capitalism. And yet we were giving homage, you know, big deal we were making about Black Wall Street and how successful it was. And what came to my mind was, you know, would we be as respectful, and I'm not talking about this show, but in the major media, of what happened in Philadelphia with the MOVE members? Would we give them just as much respect? Would we apologize for literally bombing their house and all the other homes that went down that day? I don't think so. And I think we wouldn't do that because these people were not capitalists. As a matter of fact, they were trying to go the other direction.
Right on. Good point.
And so, thank you. So my point is this for all of us, that while it is important to make sure that we acknowledge disasters, I'm sorry, I'm a little bit fuzzy tonight, but disasters like what happened on Black Wall Street, we need to also remember all of the other people that were killed in similar ways. And because they did not carry the wealth that the people who lived on Black Wall Street had, does not diminish their lives or their value. We need to remember all of it. And we also need to remember and know that America has enough money to give back $1 million to every black American for reparations. It is definitely doable. Gary Knoll had a wonderful program on this week about the enormous amount of money that we waste. We all hear about it, but you know, when you sit and listen to the list, the billions of dollars. And somebody said on BII, and I think they're wrong, they said that The black population was 40 million here in America, but I think it's bigger than that. But let's say it is 40 million. If it's 40 million, it's definitely doable because we give $6 billion away to the School Construction Authority here in New York City over a period of 5 years just to so-called build new schools. Well, you know, $1 million to each black person is a good chunk of change, but it's also good for all Americans because say the black farmers got their $1 million and that would really allow them to develop their farm, maybe even a different kind of farming that's better for the environment, but everyone would benefit because that money would go into the economy to build the economy in a better way. And what we should also be doing is thinking about ways. I've listened to everybody talk tonight. We have all pointed out the problems. I haven't heard any solutions. I've heard that we can't use the alternative energy sources that are out there right now because they're going to hurt and use child labor and other deviant kinds of labor. But we have to come out with an alternative kind of energy. We are dying. This world is dying, and it's going down fast. We don't even have time anymore to talk about the separations of class, of color, of everything. We are one human species right now because the end of the world is here. It's coming. You can't think that global warming is not going to kill us all. So all I want to say tonight is I don't think we should go out with wars. I think we should do whatever we can to work as human beings to save the planet and be more responsible. Thank you.
Continue next week with Gwen beginning.
We're going to let Dennis and Henry take us out. Henry, did you want to say something before we close out?
In the interest of time, comrades, I'd save it for next week.
Thank you. Brother Dennis, we haven't heard from you in quite a while. Please say something.
Well, I had three reports, which I won't be able to give tonight. We were boots on the ground in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We were locked and loaded.
Yeah.
There's a situation going on in Louisiana, and I believe that revolution is the only way. Black power. Thank you.
Thank you, and tonight, brothers and sisters, you have spent an hour and a half learning and teaching and loving understanding, and so let's take the next join.
Remember what Sister Gwen said. We have the problem. What are the solutions? And on that note, say good. Thank you.
Good night, my brother. This
is big revolution.
Thank you.
Solution.
Thank you, all power to people.
All power.
I wish I could be on a chain, so lonely.